This is the official HITS training and consulting podcast. We are America's law enforcement canine training resource. We're raising the training bar for police dogs everywhere by discussing the intricate details of the training techniques used by the experts. HITS Radio is merging the training world with the real world. You've been there. We've been there too.
We're back for another edition of HITS Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Meyer. Today, I have one of the HITS canine business partners with me again, Jeff Barrett. Jeff, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking.
Some big news in your world, I think. I want to share with our audience what's going on with you.
Well, January 1st was my first day of retirement, so I'm officially retired with 31 years in canine, 33 plus on the police department. It's been a long time, and I've enjoyed every second of it. But this is a welcome for sure. It's certainly a strange new trip that I'm taking. A lot of emotions mixed in with that, but mostly excitement when you wake up in the morning and go, hey, don't have to go to work.
Yeah. And it's not like you're actually retired. You've got HITS going on. You've got your pack track business. Now you'll have more time to do some more hands-on classes that we do through the company. So you're going to be plenty busy. You just don't have to go to work every day, I guess.
Yeah, I don't have to put the uniform on and suit up and go out there and do that job. So it's definitely a little less work on that end, but it frees me up to do a lot more training.
Well, I'll tell you, congratulations on a great career. I've been down to your area a lot, and I know a lot of your guys in your department and stuff. And there's people who make an impact on canine, and you've done that all over the country, and definitely in your area. You know, I talked to the people, and you've really, really contributed a lot to our profession everywhere. So I'd tell you, congratulations. What a great career, and I'm glad you're leaving, you know, intact and while you're still relatively young.
Yeah, I hope to continue with the health and take care of myself and enjoy their money
for free. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I brought you on today because we were talking, we talked about this a while back, and you and I have both been through the experience of retiring a dog and starting your second or third or fourth or fifth dog. I know you worked quite a few of them. So I thought it'd be good just to talk about that transition. But before we even get to the dog part, while we're talking about it, mentally, for your actual retirement, you know, there's some guys like, you know, that are getting, you know, closer to the end than the beginning. Any advice for, you know, how you start mentally preparing for it, and like what your thought process was when you were getting ready to actually officially pull the plug?
Yeah, it almost seems like it isn't going to get there, and it isn't going to be for real, but it definitely is a real thing, guys. And you've got to be prepared, and being prepared just means that you need to have things to do, because I see so many of my colleagues who have retired over the years. And as I go into Home Depot or one of the other local stores, I see them working in there, and I'm like, what in the hell are you doing? And he's like, you know, I could only fish so much. And
yeah,
it was just the boredom that got me. So I had to do something to keep myself busy. And so that's really the key, is to find things that will keep you busy. And the activities that you do will keep you busy for a while, but just make sure that there's some other things to do to keep your mind going and your body.
Yeah, and I think it's important to, you know, like I'm a few years away, probably around five, maybe, if that many, but anywhere from one to five, probably. And I, you know, I'm starting to already think of my plans afterwards. You know, and luckily we have a, you know, nice side business we could do, but I think it's real important to have a plan before you pull the plug. And I see some guys who are, they're leaving our job, you know, after 30, 35 years, and I ask them what they're going to do, and I don't know, I'll figure it out. That's kind of a tough position, I think.
Yeah, it really is a tough position to be in. Figuring it out is just a recipe for failure most of the time. It leads to, you know, frustration and boredom and anxiety and depression over top of all.
I do think, see if you agree with me, but I just remember, you know, it, for one, it flies by, because I've got 30 on now, and it seems like it's gone very, very fast. I think, I've talked about that before. It does seem like though back, 25 years ago when guys would be retiring off the job around here, they weren't nearly as healthy as overall that our generation seems to be. And I think we're going to live a little longer, hopefully. So I think that makes it even more important to be ready and have hobbies or a plan to do something.
I agree. Some of the guys you see work until they almost fall over dead, and then within 5 years they're dead. Just from poor health. I've seen, being in the business for 33 years, I've seen so many of the guys that I grew up that were senior to me and way senior than me die. Now, that's a lot of times just natural causes, but the natural causes are contributed to this poor health, not taking care of yourself.
Yeah, not moving. Once you stop moving, I think you're in trouble. Right. So that kind of leads us into, let's talk about changing dogs, which if you're in this profession very long, it's inevitable. How many dogs did you work total?
Total, I worked 10, and I had 11. I kept one just for a couple of months. He had bad health. But 10, in a span of 31 years, working 10 dogs seemed like you didn't work them for very long. But we're pretty hard on dogs, so we demanded a lot. So physically, some of them didn't make it for very long, with a couple of years here and there. Or we changed out dogs. I would find one that I wanted to work a little better that had some issues, and I would take the dog that I worked to a new handler, so he was up and running a lot faster. So had a lot of transition there. So over the years, I've had a lot of experience with retired dogs.
So you've had a few that you worked for a long time, and then you kept them as a retired dog, I assume, and transitioned to another dog?
Yeah, that's right. It's a weird thing to try and guess how things are going to go, because there's so many different personalities in the dogs. Now, you get some that are just super social animals and comfortable in whatever environment they're in. And then I've had others that absolutely stress out. They're high maintenance in terms of just not liking very many people, not tolerating very many people. Deal with all those personalities. Now, if you get one that's just a dream come true where he's in a social setting of any type, he's comfortable with it, doesn't show aggression to anybody. Anybody can come over and take care of him. He can take the vet's office if you choose to board him while you're gone. No problems. But ones that are strung out, that have separation anxiety, those are the dogs that we really have to concentrate on.
Yeah. So let's go through this kind of step by step. First off, you're working the dog. When did you know, I guess where I'm going is, when did you know to retire the dog? And I've seen some departments that pick an arbitrary number. I don't think you guys do that, where they'll say at 8 years old, we retire the dogs. I don't think you guys do that, do you?
No, we start looking at the physical health of the dog.
Yeah.
The one that I have right now, he limps on his front shoulders. And I think that's probably just from all the jumping and stuff over the years. But they start to age, the physical demand on the dog remains the same, but it just can't take it much.
Yeah.
It could be anything from eyesight, hearing, to the bone structure and the hips and the joints that start to fail them. So you want to start looking at least a year in advance and considering that the dog's going to need to be replaced. Now, the problem is it's not like shopping for cars and you say, okay, I found one and I'm going to get it in 6 months.
Yeah,
the dog won't be there in 6 weeks, much less 6 months. So you have to start thinking about it and looking at the dog. And when I say a year, it doesn't mean that you're going to set that particular date in stone. Yeah. It just means that that you're aware that the dog's going to have problems, that it's already starting to show that he's slowing down, and then start talking to your administration saying, listen, this is what we're looking at. This is about how much time we figure the dog's probably got left based on what we know in our experience and what the vets have told us.
Yeah, I think that's a great point right there. Is if you give what in most departments I've seen, if you give the bosses a heads up, they can budget it. And I know it always seems like, 10 grand or give or take a few thousand bucks seems like a big deal to us. But even a smaller department, the chiefs have 10 grand. If they can budget it right and they know a year in advance, that's usually a cost they can absorb fairly easily if they need to.
Yeah, and I've done it a couple different ways too. I've put a divider in the back seat so I can keep the dogs apart. Bought the dog, trained the dog, and once I know that that dog's going to be successful and it's the one we're going to keep, then we start doing the full training of it.
Yeah,
and it's a seamless transition. Then the other dog can go home and retire.
And then you're at least you're not out of service. You can still use the old dog when you needed to.
Yeah, that's an important key. Now the disadvantage sometimes is if it's not a formal school that you're getting into and you have to do everything on your own without the help of others that are in school, it can be a little tougher to find the help. It can take a little longer to get the help.
I think that's a great way to do it myself, though. We've had cars where we have two kennels in them that we can do exactly that, kind of transition over slowly. And it kind of gives you that break of not hurrying the next dog. So once you've retired the dog, what would you do at home to kind of get the dog used to being at home and not going to work every day? Do you have any advice for that?
Well, the more difficult ones, you have to really take a look at how he's going to react to that new dog. And sometimes they surprise you. You think you've got a dog that's pretty easygoing. He accepts things well. And next thing you know, you're facing a lot of turmoil in this dog because there's another one on the premise. So when you bring that dog home, for example, the dog that I have retired now, he doesn't roam the house, but he's in the house just because I have a few feelings for the old guy. But
yeah,
he stays in my office and he can see the backyard through the glass.
Yeah.
He never leaves his crate. Good crate dog. I leave it open for him. But the day that I brought the new one home, he saw him in the backyard. I never thought that he'd leave the crate. So he started to leave the crate and he would take stuff into the crate and shred it. First thing was one of my baseball caps. Next one was like an oven mitt from the kitchen. He would take it, go back in there. And what he's doing, he's probably standing there watching that dog and taking his frustrations out on the things that he takes into the kennel. So that was one of the things I had to deal with and, getting him to calm down. But there's that transition where some of the dogs see you going to work, and if he's in the house, he watches you get dressed.
Yep.
And if you leave him, there's a chance that things could happen because he's being left alone and not being allowed to go to work with you. So you may have to crate him, and then there's chances that, they chew on the crates, they tear things up in there, they're stressed. Sometimes the separation anxiety could be so great that they start to lose their hair, they lose their appetite. Those are extreme cases, but they do happen.
Oh, yeah. That's, I guess, going back to when departments tell me, we retire dogs at 8 years old because we want to give them a good retirement. That usually tells me that you haven't retired a dog before, because these dogs don't want to retire. They want to go to work, and they don't to think, I want to cut the last maybe 2-3 years. I worked at Malinois until he was 12, and he did fine. So I don't want to cut 4 years off his working career.
Most of the time it's their minds that go last and their body go first.
And kind of like old canine cops too, I guess.
That's exactly right. In my mind, I'm still physically able to go out there and jump fences and chase bad guys. But the body says no way.
I play professional hockey in my mind too, but that doesn't seem to work out. So
yeah, exactly.
But I think, one of the things is that for me, having retired several dogs too, You kind of touched on it, but I start the transition of, I figure out, like, I like having my dogs in my house. I always have. I know that's a whole topic for another show about whether dogs should be in a crate or a dog kennel all day long, but I like having my dogs in my house. So I've already socialized my dogs quite a bit to their house, to being inside. And then it's just a matter of I take a long time of, I'll cordon off part of the house for the old dog, cordon off part of the house for the new dog, and let them get used to both being in the house together, seeing each other, just knowing there's two dogs here, and let them kind of get used to the smells and the sounds from each other, long before I ever muzzle them up and walk them around together or anything. Just trying to let the new dog know, there's another dog here, or the old dog know there's a new dog here, but it's not going to change your thing. That seems to let them settle in, and I imagine after a while, your old dog got used to seeing the new dog in the backyard.
Yeah. And I would keep one crated outside while the other one would take a break outside. So they would see each other while, you know, the one that was loose would run around and see the other one. They pretty much would ignore each other. Now, they're fairly well behaved while I was there. I would never trust them to be alone together and put them home to a disaster. But,
yeah,
you know, you do a class on dog-on-dog aggression, so there's a whole process there that's part of that class that I'm sure that you also incorporate home life.
And I think that's, you know, I'm pretty passionate about having dogs that are not dog fighters, and that's why how I ended up teaching that class. We even do some hands-on work with that. And that's served me pretty well. Starting from in that class, I talk about, you know, starting from the day that we selection test the dog. If the dog's showing it, you know, a high propensity to be a dog fighter, he's just not the dog for us. We do a lot of searches off lead in our patrol division. I don't want dogs going and fighting with each other or the neighbor dogs or whatever. So, by starting from day one about not getting dog fighters and then working that throughout their career, they're pretty easy to transition to having another dog around them at home, knowing that they're not a dog fighter. And the new dog also won't have that propensity. So we kind of set ourselves up for that. And that's paid off dividends when we do go to retire him, to the point where when I retired my first dog, I had to do it because he had seizures. So he was a little bit younger, and he was kind of a grumpy old Malinois just because of his seizures and his health. And I ended up, I got to the point fairly quickly with my dog number two that I actually could leave them in the house, uncrated, by themselves, never worry about them having any problems. And what it did is the old dog taught the new dog how to behave in the house. If the new dog was going to get into anything, Bosco would go stand over him and just kind of, you know, stare at him. And the new dog, Turbo, would stop doing what he was doing. And it worked out actually kind of well. He kind of trained him for me.
Yeah, and I think you have to have a plan going into that and an understanding of what could go wrong and then what you do next. So it's like a chess game. You got to be three or four moves ahead as soon as you start to implement something like that and understand the dogs. And I think most of the dogs are going to be receptive to you being the alpha, running the show and putting your foot down the first time that they show aggression. And I think if that's done properly and swiftly enough, it makes an impression on both dogs to the point that they don't want to revisit that issue.
I agree. And I like what you say about having a plan and thinking ahead. That's where you also have to have, you know, if your spouse involved or the kids or whatever, you know, you have to get them on the same page so that you don't have because once you get, you know, if you get a good dog fight, you've taken so many steps back, it's going to take you a long time to get over that hump. But if you go nice and slow and have that plan of how you're going to integrate them. And it might be that they're never really going to get together at all, but if they're going to be in side-by-side dog runs in your backyard, the last thing you want to do is fence fighting all the time.
Yeah, and that can happen as well because they're separated. You may open the door and they go run and no issues. As soon as you put them back in the crate, they don't want
to. Did you ever have a dog that once you retired him, you decided, you know, I got to place this dog. I can't keep him anymore.
There was a couple. My very first had some heart issues, and he only worked about a year. And we thought the issue was minor, and it turned out just you could see it in the dog. The oxygen level was low. His tongue turned blue when he worked hard. Dog wound up working till he was about, or not work, live until he was about 10 or 11. But I was able to give him to my ex-in-laws. He lived there. They weren't real rough with him. He was a pretty aggressive dog, but he assimilated that home life pretty well. He didn't tear up stuff. Yeah. He wasn't aggressive toward people once he stopped working. So I was able to make a transition, but it was a little less stress on me when I got the new dog. And the dog that I just retired with, I had him for about a year and a half, and he came from a previous handler. And the handler actually asked for him back because he has kids and the dog's so social and the kids missed him. So I let him go back to that family, and he lives in the house, sleeps in the bed with the kids, and he's loving life. So in those terms, not a problem. The dog that I have at home now would probably want to dominate everybody. Not that he would be aggressive to him, but he just wouldn't listen to him for the most part. If they didn't understand how to become the alpha and lead the pack and put him in his place from time to time, he'd probably be back in about 2 weeks. And I wouldn't put that stress on the dog. I wouldn't put that stress in that.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. You know, you're the expert in the dog. So if you're in that situation and you're thinking, you know, maybe I'm going to let this dog go to another family because it'll be better for the dog, I think that's where you really have to give the dog a good hard look, put all of your expertise to the dog and understand, you know, is this the right house for the dog? Because he's a working dog. He's got a lot of training behind him. There's some liability here, obviously. You know, I think a lot of people know the story of the dog handler in California with the retired dog that they actually charged him with homicide because a dog got out after the dog had been retired. Luckily, he was acquitted pretty quickly. But, you know, obviously you gotta think through all the different angles of what can happen. But I think going back to, you know, starting with the right dog that's a nice, balanced, level-headed dog that's not showing unwarranted aggression throughout his career, if you're in that situation where you decide you want to place the dog, I think you're miles ahead from picking the right dog in the beginning.
Yeah, if you have the right dog in the beginning and things go well and all the training is there, the genetics is there, you're not going to be faced with those problems. But then we don't have a show to talk about. But there are plenty of them out there that cause issues. And it's a constant supervision of the dog, really, by the handler. I mean, this dog that I have, he's just a very social dog, loves everybody, but he does have his boundaries. You know, if you're a stranger and you try to pick him up, as with most of them, he's going to let you know that that's not acceptable behavior. I don't know. Sure. While he was working, I boarded him at our facility. They wanted to give him an exam. They went to pick him up and put him on the table, and he tried to bite everybody in the exam room. And fortunately, they still had a leash on him, so they just held him out at the end of the leash, and every time he come at one, he's on a slick floor, so they just held the leash out a little further. I'm in an airport about to get on a plane, and they call me and said, "You got to come get this dog. He's out of control." I was like, "I'm in the airport. I can't leave." So I called one of the guys that was working. He goes down, gives the dog a toy, takes the leash, takes him back home to my house, and they kept the handlers took care of him at my house for that I was gone. But it's a perfect example of, you know, educating the that's going to take care of him. If you're going to take him to a boarding facility, they have to know. There's no two ways about it. Listen, feed the dog, exercise the dog. If you understand, if it's not that type of animal, leave him there, feed him, clean the kennel out. Don't get in there with him. Fine. But there's people who think they understand dogs and they wind up hurt.
Yeah, the danger of all that is that now that dog's learned, you know, that he can get away with that.
That's exactly right.
Yep. You're fixing somebody else's, you know, screw up when you asked them not to do that. So I think that's a good, you know, having the plan, you know, most everybody, and it's really hard to part with the dog. So most everybody, the answer is be they're going to keep the dog, and then it'll be have a plan of, you know, how are you going to store the dog when you're not at home, when you're at work? How are you going to store the dog when you go on vacation? Who in your family is going to be able to watch the dog? You know, can the kids get him out or not? And I think having a good solid plan and being, you know, pretty black and white with that dog is it's better for the dog. He's had structure his whole career where you go to work, you train him, you're on top of him all day about his behavior. To just now throw him in the house and pretend he's a house pet, it's not fair to the dog. And certainly I think you're setting yourself up for, you know, at least behavioral problems and possibly, you know, something, you know, maybe a tragedy if you're not careful.
Yeah. And there's been plenty of stories that I've been a part of and know about where the dogs bitten the people who are trying to take care of them. We've had handlers that would go on vacation, no one there to take care of the dog. They didn't want to board it so that nobody at the facility would get hurt. So the handlers that would come on duty every day would go over and take care of the dogs, let the dog out of the kennel, go take a break, clean the kennel, feed the dog, water the dog, put him back up, no problem. But there's a case from time to time to go back in the kennel, feed the dog, where they've been attacked, and to the extreme, they've had to kill the dog just to get him off of them. So those things need to be understood, that there's a potential for that with some dogs. Man, don't let the dog out. If he's going to break in the kennel, use the hose to clean it out, fit it through the crate, no problem. Just leave it alone. Do what you need to do for the week that the handler's gone. Family members. Dogs have been attacked by dogs by letting the dog out while the handler's away. To the extreme, you know.
Yep. Goes back to having a plan. I'll touch on one other thing real quick and see if you agree with me. But what I've kind of seen is that when guys are working their first dog, they know they're going to get a second dog. They're almost excited, you know, because you're always thinking when you're working your first dog, when I get my next dog, this is what I'm going to do, and this is the drives I want in that dog, and you're all excited about it. That transition from your experienced dog that's all dialed in to a new dog, you and I both know that transition sucks. You know, you got now you're out working a dog that you've certified that you can't depend on as much as your old dog. So it takes a while. And then once you get that second dog all dialed in, what my experience has been, and personally I did the same thing, is that second dog seemed to have a much longer career because you start dreading, I do not want to go through that again, that retirement and the transition. So it seems like the second dog always goes a little bit too far, you know, maybe. And I'm very guilty of that. I worked too long because I did not want to give up what I already had.
And then sometimes you forget all the hard work and the extra time that you put into that initial training just to get the dogs to where you wanted them. And you just take for granted, you know, the dog that you're working that you're about to retire is almost like a robot. You understand each other with just a look. He can look at your face and tell whether you're happy or sad or what you want him to do. Just that fluidity of the relationship, the cohesiveness that you and that dog have that works out well, you forget all the hard work that you had to put in and the frustration of the dog looking at you with a blank stare like, I have no clue what the hell you just said or what you want to do. And so it's like the terrible twos in the children, you know, you pick them up and you forget all that once they get up to where you can talk to them and reason with them. And now you're back to revisiting that entire thing. And there's a lot of frustration to go with it. And on top of that, it's probably going to be an entirely different personality for that dog. So the things that you knew and understood to be true and a lot of the training bleeds over. But then there's those things that the dog just doesn't do the same. And it's a reality and it's a wake up like you think. You know, the old dog picked up on this so well and so easily. Now I'm actually having to train this other one because he just doesn't get it as fast.
Yep. And that's the last point I want to talk about is that, you know, you see the decision's made, you're going to retire the dog. It doesn't matter if it's dog one or dog four, you've retired him. Even if you're the unit trainer, I highly recommend taking another qualified person with you to that kennel to look at dogs because we all have that bias about whichever dog, you know, in our past that we personally like the best. And I know I'm guilty of it that when I start looking at dogs, I start, although I know that how the dog looks is not how he's going to perform. And I can easily justify that for anybody else. But when it's for me, I start looking at a dog thinking, well, I kind of like that dog or whatever, and do everything that I tell people not to do because we're so invested in it. So I think it's important to take another person with you that can kind of ground you a little bit because you're not getting your dog number one. You're getting a brand new dog. It's going to be totally different. And I've seen so many people that they want to replicate the first dog they had and it's just not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. And sometimes it's a little easier to pick the second dog from a trainer standpoint. Yeah. If you know the personality of the person handling. Some of the issues that I've had in the past is not knowing the handler very well come into the unit. And so I didn't want to pick a dog that was going to overwhelm
me,
be too strong of a personality where maybe the handler wasn't as tough and solid of a leader that he should be with a dog. And then on the other hand, maybe it's a good strong handler that has a weaker dog and they crush the spirit of the dog by being just a little too hard on him. So for the second one, if that trainer knows personality of the handler better, he can start looking at the dog's personalities a little more and try to make that match as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for, what I was kind of more alluding to is for your own personal dog. If you're the person who's got to go pick your next dog, you know, have some help. I think for what you're saying, if you're the trainer and you're picking a second dog for another handler, absolutely. I think that makes it a lot easier because you know the handler's abilities and stuff. What do you think about having, if it, you know, say the guy's handled the dog for 5 or 6 years, and now you're going down to the vendor to select him another dog. Do you want that handler there or not for his influence? Or do you want to just come back and show, here's your dog?
No, we even do that on the first one. We'll always take the handler. And we typically go as a group. So there'll be four, maybe eight of us everybody wanted to go, dogs, give their opinions, because it's important that everybody see the dogs and hear what we as trainers and supervisors have to say about the dogs and how we're judging the performance of the dogs and what we see in our testing. And then we're going to let the handler have a say-so, because we want to hear what he has to say. Not that he's making the decision in any way, but we just want to hear what he thinks and how he's looking at dogs. We want him to hear it as well. So we give him the dog on a leash to walk around with and spend a half hour walking the dog around to see with each other how comfortable he is. Not that it makes a final impact in any kind of way, but we definitely want him there. We want him there for the second one as well, because we want to hear what they have to say, and we'll all sit down and talk about it. We don't always make the right choices, but I think as a collective, to be able to hear each other's opinions about what we've seen in testing the dogs and personalities of both the dog and the person, it helps us reason through the choice.
I think that's a great way to do it. I think sometimes if I'm going by myself to get a dog, a lot of times I don't want to have a handler with me, because I don't want them to. The one thing that I don't want to have is that if it's between dog A and dog B, either dog you get, you and I both know that there's going to be some holes in that dog, and you're going to have some difficulties, whether you're trained in patrol, detection, whatever it is. Every dog you work through something. And I always worry about the handler with the personality that starts thinking, well, if we would have taken dog B instead of dog A, we wouldn't be here. It's like,
yeah, even though I'm going to beat myself up over it when I make that choice and go through it for every reason that could be imaginable. You know, maybe this other dog wouldn't have had that problem. But typically what you'll find is, whether they'll admit it or not, they're looking at the physique of the dog.
Oh, yeah.
So the dog stands and appears and his colors and his size, and all these things, which have nothing to do with his ability to work. But that's typically how people pick pets.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't know. And so that's why we, even though we allow the handler to speak his mind and talk about the things that he sees and feels about the dog, it's neither here nor there.
Well, I guess to sum this up, I think, what we're talking about is, first off, pick the right dog. Then, when you're working the dog, at some point in his career, start planning ahead as you're going to transition to your next dog, and let the admin know you're going to have some money to pay for another dog. Take a group with you to buy the dog, take your time to pick the right dog. Have a good plan for that second dog, how he's going to work into the household with the first dog, and then the best thing I say is just enjoy it, because what a fun ride it is. When I look back, I think of, going from dog one to dog two and dog two to dog three and to four, you're there's some ups and downs, but then when you get a little distance, you can really think of how much fun each dog was and how different they all were.
Yeah. And when I look back on each one of those transitions, it helps me realize how much I grew as a trainer, because the personality of that dog required that I come up with a solution. It's training, because not every training technique fit the entire stack of dogs that I've had. Even though the basics certainly apply, because they're founded in learning theory, the techniques would have to be changed.
Hits this year in Phoenix. If you like, just maybe picking some brains of people who have been through maybe retiring dogs or anything else, there'll be 1,000 other handlers there that you can sit down, have a beer with at night, or have lunch with, or meet in a classroom. So the networking part of HITS is always one of the most valuable parts of HITS. I always say, that's as good as all the classes, I think, along with, over 100 vendors to see all the different equipment, talk to different dog vendors. If you are in this situation where you're going to be looking for a dog soon, we have lots and lots of dog vendors that, even though they don't have dogs there on site, you can stand there, meet the dog vendor, hear what they have to say, and maybe figure out, do you want to travel to their kennel and get a dog from there? So lots of good opportunities in August in Phoenix.
Yeah, and for us as owners of the business, we're always looking for your input and your suggestions on what we can do to make it better. Classes, new, ones that we haven't had for a while. Anything that, if you've been to HITS before, you saw a class years ago and you'd like to have that back, we're always looking for your input. That's so important to us to to keep our ear to the track, so to speak, so that you guys have a voice in what type of training you present at HIT.
So I'll put, on that note, I'll put the website will be in the show notes, and then your email and my email will be in the show notes. So if anybody has any questions, thoughts, or feedback, or have like some suggestions for HITs this year, please contact us through the show notes. You'll see our emails. And Jeff, thanks for jumping on today, and congratulations again on a successful career and next step here in your life.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jeff.
If you're looking to make an investment in your canine career, come to HITs 2020. There's no substitute for the real thing. Whether you're a new handler who's looking to learn more about dog training, or an experienced trainer who's looking for new training ideas and techniques, come to HITs 2020, where the investment is well worth the return. HITs 2020 will have more classes and more vendors who give away more free raffle gifts and free cash than ever before. HITs is the world's largest canine seminar and is open to police officers and military members. Our experience makes the difference. You've been there, and we've been there too.